I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen up, you mother...
Politics, politics, humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Art Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Art Cop Radio. It's show number 149. Good to see you. I know it's been a while. I finally got another radio show finished, and that makes me feel good. And I'm not saying it's a good show, but it's kind of a throwback show to the shows that you used to know, shows that you used to remember, shows that you used to like. So let's hope it's good. As always, it's jam-packed. You know, for so long, I didn't have anything to say on the radio, and then, of course, once I get plugged in, it went too long, and I had to cut some parts out. So to make it all fit, I'm going to have to make this short. Start off with a shot of Chinagra from my good friend Zach in Seattle. Wow, it Chinaco tastes good at 7:58 in the morning. Another reason I got to do this quick. Mrs. Bart's dad turns 85 this weekend, so we're on the road again. Got to finish this show, got to finish the page, all before 3 o'clock. Can I do it? Who knows? But I won't get it done if I mess around, so let's get right to the big show!
This is www.bartcop.com.
Well, it seems there's only one big story going around today, and that's the hellacious financial mess the whole world is in because those Bush bastards stole all that money. Still to this day, nobody will use those phrases, the Bush bastards stole the money, but we all know they did, but nobody will say it because the whore media is soundly behind Bush. But, you know, on top of that, what happens if Obama's big gamble fails? What do we do then? He's throwing... Geez, how many trillions we don't even know at the problem and hoping that that's going to work. But we don't know what happens if it fails. Then what do? We wait 6 months and throw another bunch of trillions that we don't have at the same problem? And it just seems like it's impossible for a white rich man in Washington or anywhere to get arrested due to all this stuff. You know, the Bush bastards, they came up with that first $700 billion. And they gave away $350 billion, and they won't even say where it went. I swear I saw a thing, probably in the back issues. Might have been the FDIC, somebody. Maybe it was the Treasury Department. Somebody just said, never mind where that $350 billion went. We don't have to tell you. We're not going to tell you, and that's all there is to it. And, of course, the Democrats said, well, that's okay. We don't mind. No problem there. And now Obama's getting ready to give another $350 billion, well, the second half of that $700 billion to these banks. And even when the banks have money, they're refusing to lend it out. Seems like when a bank gets a bunch of money, first thing they do is give everyone a bunch of bonuses that they didn't earn. Christ, you run a bank into the ground, how do you qualify for a bonus anyway? And they say, oh, well, we have to pay the bonuses or they'll leave. Well, where the fuck are they going to go? To another broke bank? Some broke bank going to hire them away because they did such a great job breaking the other bank? So they've got all this money, and they refuse to lend it out, and I want to know why that's not a crime. The government gives a bank money to loan out, and they spend it on something else. Now, think, if I came to your house, say I was a roofer, and I come to your house and say, lady, you need a new roof, and I'll put it on for $3,000. I know that's not, it's just an example. So you give me the $3,000, and I go buy tequila with it. Now, surely that's a crime. You know the cops would be at my house that night to arrest me for misappropriation of funds or just outright theft or fraud, or they'd have a bunch of, oh, there'd be 16 counts. You know there would. And that's what happens when you steal $3,000 from an old lady. But when you steal $300 billion from the government, they say, well, that's okay. We don't mind. No problem there. As always, the press refuses to do their goddamn jobs. Obama's doing what he can. The Democrats, they're fighting them as they always do. The Republicans, they're like with impeachment. The whole country wants the Republicans to get on board and pull on the same end of the rope, but they refuse. They say, oh, after 8 years of binge spending, now we're going to get all fiscally conservative when the little guy needs a bailout. For some reason, they're ready to bail out the banks and the insurance companies and the billionaires and the car companies. And there's another thing. The car companies' bailout is a very unpopular idea. I don't get that. You'd think somewhere the idea of saving Detroit, saving those 3 million jobs, another 3 million unemployed people is not a good thing. Aren't we being a little short-sighted by not wanting to bail out the car companies? What are you going to do next time you blow a carburetor? Or, hell, I don't know, a distributor? I don't know enough about cars to know which parts blow. You blow a part in your car, and you go down to your Pep Boys, your local parts store, and they say, we don't have no parts. It's like, well, I got a $15,000 car that needs a $200 part, and you're saying I can't have a $200 part? No. Well, then my $15,000, oh, maybe that's the trick. Now you have to go buy a new car. Just kidding, but it's not funny. We've got the biggest mess on our hands, and the whore press is not explaining it. At least they're not explaining it on a level that I can understand. And it just makes you wonder. So many hundreds of billions of dollars flying around, and nobody knows anything. And for some reason, I don't know why, but Obama's wanting to work on everything at the same time. You know, I remember Clinton did that. They said it was a big mistake. But wouldn't we all feel a little better if Obama would work on just the economy for like maybe 90 days? You know, he's working on health care, and he's... And why in the world did he say he was going to balance the budget in 4 years? Or no, he's going to cut the deficit in half, is what he said. Well, that seems like a really, really dumb thing to say. Don't mean to get on my man Barack, but why in the world would you even say that? I mean, rumor has it that Wall Street liked hearing that. Well, wait a minute. Let's talk about Wall Street for a second. Every step Obama makes, the market goes down. Why doesn't he call the 10 biggest assholes on Wall Street and bring them over to the White House and say, what the fuck would make you guys happy? Is anything going to make you guys happy? Every time I take a breath, the market goes down another $100. Tell me, what would make the market go up? They could try reverse engineering. Just ask them sons of bitches, what would make you buy some stock? And then do what they say if it's reasonable. But it just seems like the mess just keeps getting bigger. You know, the billionaires, the super rich, they're just stealing more money every day. Every time something comes up now, oh, I need $100 billion, and then I'm not going to do anything with it. I'm just going to steal that $100 billion. Jesus. How are we going to come out of this? Are we going to come out of this? And you know, it's kind of hard to do a comedy radio show when every story in the pile of stuff here is doom and gloom, and we're all going to hell, and we're all losing our houses, we're losing our job, we got no health care, everything's bad, the war is going bad, everything's bad. Good thing I have some tequila stocked up.
This is Bart Cop Radio.
All right, here's a topic for you. Should there be cameras covering the coffins when they come home? I say yes. Almost everybody is saying no, don't do that. It's awful, it's terrible. And they keep yelling about the protesters. Well, I have a feeling that the military knows how to handle protesters. Why are we allowing some vague alleged future threat of some potential protesters to dictate policy to us? And not to get on Obama, but he pulled a, you know, the big Weasley, oh, I'm going to point in, you know, we're looking at it. I'm going to point in a blue ribbon panel to investigate it. Well, gee, Barack, you don't have an opinion of your own. You've been running for office for 2 years, and now you're there, and when they ask you about a problem, you say you're going to look into it. Well, you never once thought about it, Barack. Really? Really? I had a subscription to Newsweek, and I'm going to let it run out. They keep sending me, oh, Bart, how about for a nickel, we'll give you 3 more years. No, you guys blow me. Fucking twisted bullshit reporting. Half of it's lies, and half of it's they're too stupid to tell the story. Don't you hate to read a news story And when you get done, you just have all the questions. Well, why did that happen? And why not do this? And what's wrong with you? I mean, they just write down a bunch of stuff, always forgetting the who, what, and the where, and the why. But this is a news whore. It's by John Barry. Never heard of him. Under the title of The Military. I saw the coffins arrive by accident. I was at Dover a couple of years ago, pursuing another story on my Pentagon beat, and a senior Air Force officer took me to watch the giant C-17 arrive and discharge its melancholy cargo. I don't know, it's a bunch of caskets, melancholy. Lots of times these writers are so ready to work in every fun word they can find, you know. Why spend all the years in English literature if you're going to use normal words that people use, you know? Can't have that. The scene was off the record. No press or photographers allowed. As I recall, there were 6 coffins and a few small clumps of civilians to receive them. Now, here we go again. Clumps of civilians. What kind of bullshit writing is that? Who is this John Barry, and what's wrong with him? If he was here, I would slap him. I would slap him hard. You dumbass. Clumps of people? No. How about there was 6 or 8? Why don't you say that? There was clumps of people. Blow me. One by one, the flag-draped coffins slid down from the nose of the cargo plane, and one by one, the coffins were shepherded. Yeah, they had little shepherd dogs running around circles. By an honor guard, a half dozen soldiers in dress uniforms and white gloves to waiting hearses. 1 or 2 elderly people wept. Everyone else was stoical. There were no bugles, no bands, there was no pageantry, just the heavy tread of the honor guard and a ritual perfected through such repetition, through much repetition. It was an event so moving in its intimacy and restraint out there on the acres of concrete that I felt an intruder. It was so moving that I felt an intruder. Shouldn't that be I felt like an intruder? If you feel an intruder, that means there's an intruder there, and you put your hand on him, and you felt the intruder. What's wrong with John Barry? Why can't people write a damn story that makes sense? I was reading U.S. Horror Today this morning, and they just left a word out. I had to read the sentence 3 or 4 times. It's like, well, yeah, they forgot the verb. What's wrong with people? These fancy-ass literature graduates, I don't have any idea that a sentence might need a verb in it to make any damn sense. Closing up here, I was glad there was no waiting cameras and flashbulbs. Last weekend, Obama was asked if he'd reversed the ban on Dover. On media, Dover somewhat haltingly announced that he was reviewing the policy, and sure enough, Robert Gates confirmed that he'd launched a review the instant he heard Obama's remark. Yeah, what a giant hand job. I hate getting a hand job from a Democrat, but as soon as the subject comes up, oh, we're going to draw lots to see who would get on the Blue Ribbon Committee who will report back to us in 15 years on what we might want to do maybe. Well, fuck you. Someone make a decision, would you? And I am for cameras, and for the obvious reason that it makes war a little harder to wage. If every night on the nightly news, they should make that a law. Every night on the nightly news, they show the coffins coming home. They show the family standing there weeping. That would result in fewer wars, fewer dead. But no, see, that's not the goal. The goal is to wage war efficiently. If Chevron needs a war waged, they don't want a bunch of family getting in the way. They just want the soldiers to go over there, get their oil. If they die, we'll cover it up, bring them home in after dark. Nobody needs to know anything. It's just sickening. I'm sick of it. You should be sick of it, too. Here's another story. You know, it's just one hand job story after another, and there may even be some of you who don't like the word hand job, but what else are you going to call it? Instead of getting the facts, instead of getting some results, all you get is this bogus hand job that does nobody any good. It's just useless, totally worthless. Big headline, a torture report could spell big trouble for the Bush bastards. Well, yeah, and it could not, you know, because if you get a bunch of assholes sit around in a circle and flap their gums for a while, and then they get up and leave, well, that didn't cause anyone any trouble, did it? They keep talking about they might get together and form a committee and appoint a blue panel to maybe investigate them. Fuck you, just do it. Wouldn't it be nice to pick up a paper and say, investigation underway? No, you 100 times you pick up a newspaper and says, oh, they're thinking about maybe considering an investigation. Well, just do it. Quit talking about it. An internal Justice Department report on the conduct of senior lawyers who approve waterboarding and other harsh interrogation tactics is causing anxiety amongst former Bush bastards, period. H. Marshall Jarrett, chief of the Department's Ethics Watchdog Unit, the Office of Professional Responsibility, the OPR, confirmed last year he is investigating whether the legal advice in crucial interrogation memos was consistent with the professional standards applied to the Justice Department attorneys. According to two knowledgeable sources who can't say anything because they're probably lying, a draft of the report was submitted in the final weeks of the Bush bastard administration. It sharply criticized the legal work of two former top officials, Jay Bybee and John Yoo, Y-O-O, as well as that of Stephen Bradbury, who was the chief of the Office of Legal Counsel, the OLC. At the time the report was submitted, the sources said, Bybee, Yoo, and Bradbury did not respond. Well, yeah, because they're guilty. They don't want to talk about anything. But then Attorney General Michael Mukasey and his deputy Mark Phillip strongly objected to the draft. According to the sources, Phillip wanted the report to include responses from all three principals, said one of the sources, a former top Bush bastard lawyer, because he could not be reached. OPR is now seeking to include the responses before a final version is presented to Eric Holder, the guy who said that we're all a bunch of race cowards. Well, there's another stupid thing to do. Dude, you're a black guy. You're in charge of the Justice Department. Obama is a black guy. He's the president. Why is now the time to start whining about a nation of racial cowards? You don't have anything else to do. You're in charge of the Justice Department. You got 8 years of crimes, major, major global crimes, 4,200 dead soldiers, 100,000 dead civilians minimum, and you're worried about the race problem. Why don't you do your damn job and show us how good a black guy and how effective a black guy can be doing his damn job instead of getting up there and flapping your gums and calling people names? What's wrong with you? You know, I'm not very smart, but doesn't it seem like I could do a better job at everything more than anybody? You know, if you just go to work and just do something, if there was 40 when you got there and 45 when you left, well, that 5 is something you created. You actually did something. You moved the ball forward like 5 yards. But no, can't nobody do that these days. You just get up there and you flap your gums and you play with yourself and you say, I did a great job. And everybody, oh, yeah, you did great. Well, no, do something, accomplish something. All right, back to the story. If Holder accepts the OPR findings, the report could be, well, see, there you go again. If 45 things all happen, all 45 of them could happen, and, you know, but if one or two is missing, it goes nowhere. So if the 45 things in a row all happen, it could be forwarded to the state bar associations for possible discipline. Well, there you go. After we jump through the 44 hurdles, then it might maybe go somewhere, maybe sort of, maybe kind of. The OPR probe began after Jack Goldsmith, a Bush bastard who took over OLC in 2003, protested the legal arguments made in the memos. Goldsmith resigned the following year after withdrawing the memos and later wrote that he was astonished, unquote, by the, quote, deeply flawed and, quote, sloppily reasoned legal analysis in the memos by you and Bybee, including their assertion challenged by many scholars that the president could unilaterally disregard all laws passed by Congress banning torture. Well, see, now that's pretty simple. The president's either above the law or he's not. Can we fucking vote? And now he's guilty or at least charged with something, charged him with a damn crime, put him in front of a jury and do something. It's like in Washington, you get points for just masturbating. Just get up there and pretend you're doing something. It's Lucy at the candy factory. You don't even touch any candy. You just watch it all fall on the floor. And then you get a Medal of Honor at the end of the day. You know, Newsweek is so screwed. I'm wondering if I should reverse my decision to not renew. Maybe I should renew just because of the bullshit you just don't believe you can read in a national magazine that's allegedly of some stature. Personally, I think BarkUp.com has a whole lot more credibility and gravitas, etc., etc., than anything that Newsweek and Time and the Washington Whore Post and the New York Whore Times, the sons of bitches. Have I ever put an issue that was just lies from beginning to end? No. I might make a mistake, but I don't just sit there and fucking lie to you like every major publication in the damn United States. For some reason, it's under the banner Periscope. Oh, are we in a sub? Jesus. And the sub headline is Diplomacy, the subcategory under Periscope, please. They can't call it news, no. Under Diplomacy, here's a picture of Hillary. It's a small world after all. Oh, really? You managed to dig up another cliche and stick it in a headline? I am shocked. I'm just shocked. Secretary of State was the consolation prize, but Hillary Clinton was still delighted to get it. Her problem now is that the Obama administration is populated with big players. Yeah, there's a lot of players bigger than Hillary. Yeah, a whole lot of them. What a dumbass thing to say. And some big egos who are stealing away her turf bit by bit. Well, she's a Secretary of State. They're stealing away the Secretary of State's turf. I don't believe you. I think you're just a dirty, rotten whore. Newsweek, who's this lie by? Michael Hirsch. Dirty, lying whore, making shit up. You know, if you print anything about either Clinton, oh, we got to read it. Oh, there's nothing more entertaining than reading some dirt about the Clintons, how evil they are, how petty they are, how vengeful they are, how crooked they are, how Bill's probably looking at some girl right now. Turn the page. I got to see how it ends. Go, go, go. It's about the Clintons. Oh, I just love it. Sons of bitches. They just make shit up. Now, listen to this. Her problem is now the Obama administration is populated with big players and some big egos who are stealing away her turf bit by bit. Hillary may think her worldwide fame will give her leverage. Well, yeah, it fucking does, idiot. Oh, Shaquille thinks that his being 9 foot tall gives him an advantage on the basketball court. Well, yeah, it fucking does. What's wrong with you? But there's a two-word rebuttal, Colin Powell. What the fuck does that mean? That doesn't mean a damn thing. Colin Powell used to be Secretary of State. But what does that mean? Oh, that he got pushed aside by the president? Well, yeah, he was the voice of reason. He sold out. Colin Powell's a dirty, lousy whore. He sent those 4,200 soldiers to their death with a big-ass smile on his face. Whatever you say, Master George. You want me to say that Saddam's got nuclear missiles and he's ready to launch? Yes, sir, Master Bush. I'll do whatever you tells me. That's Colin Powell. Anyone think Hillary's going to do that? No, that's not going to happen. I got two words for you. Nye. Colin Powell. Nye. Fucking Newsweek. Do you really charge for this? How do you guys stay in business? I hope you go out of business this year. Blow me, Newsweek. Here's a rundown of who might steal Hillary's thunder and her headlines. You know, the very point that this bullshit article is in the news proves that it can happen. Bill and Hillary are the biggest story in the history of mankind, and nobody can change that. And they're saying people like Jim Jones, a retired Marine general, is reasserting the national security. Yeah. Jim Jones ain't going to steal Hillary's thunder. Blow me. Tim Geithner. Well, yeah, he's the finance guy. What's finance got to do with Secretary of State? Nothing. Geithner ain't going to steal nobody's thunder. He's over making thunder in the financial sector. What's that got to do with Hillary? George Mitchell. Yeah, he's working on the Israeli-Palestinian problem. Yeah, good luck there, George. What kind of idiot takes that job? What a dumbass thing to do. Hey, George, we need somebody to beat their head on a fucking wall for about 10 years. How's your head? Oh, I need a headache. Yeah, count me in for that job, idiot. It's not ever going to stop. We've talked about this 1,000 times. They'd rather watch your kids die than leave the sacred sand. So it's not going to be solved. There is no God. He doesn't want you to stay on the sacred sand. The sand isn't sacred. It's all a bunch of crap. Who was that? Jacob or Isaac, somebody put their kid on the altar and God said, slice them up. And he said, well, sure thing, God, whatever you need. That's what the Middle East is full of. I want you to slice your kids up. Yes, sir, you got it. What a dumbass thing to do. I remember saying this when I was a little bitty kid. You know, I've mentioned before, second grade or so, I thought this religion stuff is so full of shit. When they told us that story about the guy put his kid on the altar and God told him to slice him up, I would have said, hey, fuck you. I ain't slicing my damn kid up. What are you, nuts? But no, the people in the Bible, oh, yes, sir, God, you want me to slice my kid up? You got it. And he reached his hand up, ready to slice, and God, whatever, sent one of his angels, like the Corleones would send some angel over there, oh, grab his hand at the last second. Well, what a dirty trick to play on someone who believes in you. All right, here we go. Dennis Ross. Longtime Mideast negotiator expected to beat Hillary's top advisor among the yak. Well, yeah, Dennis Ross, he's going to be stealing a bunch of Hillary's thunder. You can bet on that. Anybody want to gamble? I'll bet none of these sons of bitches steal Hillary's thunder. Hillary's always going to have the thunder. In the year 2099, it's going to be story after story about Hillary. It's not going to change. Nothing can change it. But what a dumbass thing to put in this dumbass magazine. Last guy is Richard Holbrook. There's five of these people. They could be stealing, they may be stealing, they perhaps might be someday stealing Hillary's thunder. Richard Holbrook, the heavy hitter, gets the world's top trouble spots, Pakistan and Afghanistan. He's in charge of all U.S. policy here, across many agencies, plus state. Well, I don't know what that means. In my limited knowledge of government, the Secretaries of State is in charge of our foreign policy after Obama. If Holbrook wants to get over there and micromanage Pakistan, Afghanistan, I imagine Hillary would welcome that. I don't see what a thunderstorm there's going to be out of that, though. But all in all, just a really idiotic article about who might steal Hillary's thunder. I got an idea. Why don't you write a substantive piece on there? Why don't you tell us something about Hillary we don't know? Why don't you tell us what she's doing, for fuck's sake? Instead of giving us a list of five people who might steal her thunder, blow me!
Crossing sand in the back of a truck bed. 12 keys, both silence and lights red. Smacked on his dome with the club of a white van. No food, no water, no rice red. King North keeping seeds in his white van. In the middle of the dark is night bed. Step to the north end. Are you a minute man? Wait a minute man.
Okay, this next bit is probably going to solve the big financial crisis. But, you know, nobody wants to solve the financial crisis. They want to just wallow in it for a few years because, like always, the super rich are making money off the crisis. They always do. The super rich make money either way. They're always going to make a lot of money, but the only time they can make a real killing is when things are bad. You know, like when you get a war going, that's when they really drag in the money. But if you get a president in there like Clinton who gives you peace and prosperity, you can't make no money with peace and prosperity. People moving up in the world, people leaving one job to go to a better paying job. No, that's bad for the super rich. They want you to be happy as hell you have a job where nobody asks for a raise, and if you don't stand up fast enough when the boss enters the room, he might just fire you. That fear puts a whole lot of money in their pockets, them sons of bitches. See a headline here in the Whore Newsweek. Myth: credit cards are killing us. With the credit crisis, credit card debt is widely considered to be the source of the next meltdown, as one Business Week headline put it. Like subprime mortgages, credit card debt is often securitized. No, it isn't. Oh. Securitized meaning it's packaged, sliced, and resold all around the world. Well, who the hell is going to buy debt from us now? Crooked America. Crooked, greedy America. You know, so much of everything is like a dope deal. I've said it for 30 years because it's true. If you've got a reputation as a dope dealer who's a decent guy, you sell quality stuff and the weight is right, and et cetera, and then you start selling shit, well, then you've lost your business. And that's just what the American bankers have done. They were selling good loans to the Saudis or the Dubais or the Japanese, whatever, for decades. And they just decided, well, I know, instead of selling them food, let's sell them shit. Let's just take a big dump on their dinner plate and we'll sell it to them and tell them that's a good meal. And it all went bad. Nobody likes it. Nobody trusts us anymore. They know when you deal with America, you're going to get screwed because America, they have no quality control. They just sell you crap, and they know they're selling you crap, too. Anybody see the 60 Minutes last week where they had a guy on there that explained to him? I think he said they were running through $400 million a day, and he kept telling them this money isn't coming back. They interviewed a lady, and she made $1,200 a month or something, and they wrote down $4,000 a month on her application. They had regular meetings, this guy said, where they'd call a bunch of people in their room, and they'd say, okay, now the whatever the auditors, whatever they're called, are going to be here in an hour. So let's go over what we're going to tell them. And what we're going to tell them is this guy's got no debt and he's making all kinds of money and they'll approve the loan. And so that's what they did again and again and again. And this guy, he kept saying, what are we doing? This money that we're giving out, $400 million a day, it's not coming back. This lady they talked to was a black lady in her 50s, kind of uneducated, making $1,200 a month, maybe the top limit she's going to make in her life. and they give her some $400,000, $600,000 house. Well, she can't make payments on that. The payments on her house were more than her gross wages were. Oh, and they said they refinanced this lady four times. In 4 years, they refinanced her four times, which generated, they gave her $20,000 every time they refinanced, and the bank made $40,000 every time they refinanced. So, you know, it's Bart's Law number two. If you can make a mistake and put $40,000 in your pocket, you're going to make thousands and thousands of mistakes, and that's just what they did. The debt is often securitized, meaning it's packaged, sliced, and resold all around the world. It's also grown at a fervid pace, increasing by 80% since 1999 in the U.S., according to the consultancy InnoVest. Well, yeah, hey, InnoVest, where have you been the last 10 years? With all that in mind, credit cards look a lot like mortgages did at the end of 2007 when the frothy signs of a bubble became clear. Frothy signs of a bubble. See, that's more bullshit talk. Why can't they talk straight? But Bernard Gaff, an economist at the Deutsche Bank, asks, what credit card bubble? The relative size of two sectors attests to that skepticism. The U.S. credit card debt at just under $1 billion in aggregate is less than one-tenth the size of the mortgage market. But that affects it. All right, I'll come back. The rise in home equity financing, which allows homeowners to borrow against their house, their value of the house, contributed to the explosive growth of that sector. Credit cards, on the other hand, are mostly used for everyday purchases like groceries and gasoline. Well, I remember we ran the story on BarkUp.com a couple months ago, and it made all the sense in the world, and it pretty much pegged the problem that we have. But, of course, nobody cares. Nobody read it. Everybody discounts the facts in this case, which have always been. Okay, I was in credit for 30 years. I know what I'm talking about. When an average family files bankruptcy, I don't know how it works now since they fixed the law, but it used to be you file bankruptcy, they say, all right, what do you want to keep? And you answer, I want to keep my home and my cars. And the credit cards, you just let them go. So the bank takes the hit on the $10,000, wherever you owe on your credit card. But that's okay. Banks charge 30% interest. Banks have, until this year, have always been super rich. Every time you see a commercial, what's in your wallet? They're saying, we've got so much money, we want to loan you some money. You sure you don't need some money? We got tons of it. We got mountains and mountains and mountains of money. Don't you want to borrow some? How about a new boat? How about a new car? How about a trip around the world? Don't you need some? Want to fix up your house? You want to maybe send your kids to a better school? We got lots and lots of money to sell you. Lots and lots and lots of money. We just got too much money. Please come take some money from us. And they charge you 30%, and they make billions and billions of dollars. Bankers always make money. Then they changed the law, said you had to pay back the credit cards too. So now, when you file bankruptcy, you don't get to choose. In the old days, you say, I want to keep my house, want to keep my car, screw the credit cards. So the bank loses $10,000. Now you say, I can't afford the credit cards and the house and the car. So I'm going to keep my car and let you take the house back. So instead of losing $10,000, the bank loses maybe $300,000. You see, the problem is 30 times bigger than it was. But nobody cares. Nobody even looks at that. Nobody will even consider the possibility that this big, giant fuck-up we're all involved in now is because they made people pay back their credit cards when you file bankruptcy. I don't know that that answers every question, but I'm telling you, 30 years in the credit business, that's what happened. Your credit cards weren't secured. If you went and bought a boat and put on your Visa card, yeah, they might come get the boat, but not many people do that. Like they just said, most of your credit card purchases are a couple hundred dollars at a time. If I take Mrs. Bart to Vegas, well, they're not going to repossess my trip to Vegas. They fucking can't. When everything goes bad, and again, they're acting like, oh, people, these tricksters, they load up on debt and then they file bankruptcy so they can laugh at the bank. No, that's not what happens. Something like 80 or 90% of all bankruptcies involved losing a job or getting hurt or both. You know, you fall off a roof and break your back, you're not going to be working on the roof for a while, and you got medical bills and you got problems. So you file bankruptcy, you don't pay for the credit cards, you don't pay for your medical troubles. In the old days, you kept your car, you kept your house, you didn't pay your medical bills, you didn't pay your credit cards, and everything worked out fine. The bank still made money. The healthcare cost is adding up, and yeah, that's a problem. Again, we tried to fix in 93, 94, but no, nobody wanted to fix it. It's too big to fix, they said. There was one-seventh of the economy, they said. Well, they said now it's one-fifth of the economy. How big do you want it to get before we fix it? Doesn't anybody want to get anything fixed? No. They want to stand around and masturbate. That's what this whole country does. They just do that. Nothing ever gets done unless it's a poor black family. Then the hammer of justice comes down and hits them hard and daddy goes to prison. But if it's a white guy stealing hundreds of billions of dollars, that's okay. Makes me sick, should make you sick too. If we went back to the old rules where you don't have to pay your credit cards, then people would stay in their houses. We'd have no problem. They could fix that today. Obama could call everybody in the room and say, tell you what, you credit card sons of bitches, we're going to give you $50 billion, whatever it takes, and we're changing the law. From now on, they don't have to pay when I file bankruptcy. So when you have to file bankruptcy, you keep your house, you keep your car. Detroit is okay. The housing sector is okay. The lending sector is okay. The mortgage people are fine. No, we didn't want that. The sons of bitches, the Senate and the House, they took bribes from the bankers to give them a better deal, and look what it's got us. Will anybody else tell you this? No. I'm an idiot. I don't know what I'm talking about half the time. But this is a fact. This is what has caused the big problem. When you're heavy in debt, they wanted you to stay heavy in debt. They wanted you trapped like some damn bear. You got your foot caught in a trap and you can't get away. In the old days, you could gnaw your foot off and hobble away, but now you can't even do that anymore. That's what caused the crisis. They could fix it tomorrow, but they don't want to because the bankers have too much money. Now we're giving them more money. Everything's going crazy. The guys who screwed up the most are getting paid the most. They just don't want to fix it. That should piss you off. Now, this next rant is completely off the top of my head. Jesus, it would be a different radio show if I just had a little time. You know, if I had the luxury of, you know, just sitting down with a pen and paper and writing an outline, you know, be sure to mention this, mention that, be sure to mention this first and then follow up with that. All this will make a whole lot more sense, but there's just no time. All I can do is turn on the microphone and ramble. So here we go. Don't you think one of the biggest problems that America has is everybody got too greedy and everybody got too big? Take someone like, any of them, take Bank of America. What have they got, 10,000 offices? You don't need that. You know, we have a paradigm already in place. We have 50 states, and in bigger states like New York and Texas and California, they could cut them up in, say, 5 pieces each. The biggest problem we have right now is when, you know, they say, oh, that bank's too big to fail. Well, why did we let it get too big? It reminds me of the, you know, like when there's an E. coli outbreak. You know, it affects like 15 states. That's bullshit. If there's an E. coli outbreak in Georgia, that should affect only Georgia. Why do we have to have one processing plant sending hamburger to 40 states? That's stupid. That's just asking for trouble. It's the same way with the banks. When Bank of America buys people and Wells Fargo buys people and Wachovia, they, you know, everybody, they just get in this Reagan mood where we're going to buy everybody. So then you get some idiot asshole at the top, and he's making bad decisions for 4,000 banks or 10,000 banks instead of 6 or 8 banks. Think, if you're the biggest banker and say you own 5 banks in Little Rock, Arkansas, and you're an idiot and you fuck up and those banks go under, well, that's not a big problem because there's other banks in Arkansas. There's you know, the FDIC, there's the government, that, you know, people that can step in. It's a Little Rock-sized problem, and it would be so easy to contain. But no, they just kept growing. The Little Rock Bank, they buy all the banks in Oklahoma and Missouri and Kansas and Tennessee and Louisiana and Texas. And now when there's a fuck up, now you got 8 or 10 states going under. That's crazy. There's no reason. And it all gets down to greed. You know, the sons of bitches, you know, they don't want to make $1 million a year. They want to make $1,000,005 a year. They figured out that you can make $5 more if you put everything you have in the same pile. But then you get a leak in that pile and you lose everything. That's crazy. You know how they always tell you when you go in the stock market, don't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, you have to spread out. But in reality, they do the opposite. These banking problems, are, like right now, you figure Phoenix and Vegas and California, I don't know where all the bad spots are, probably Miami, Boston, whatever. Those banks should have a problem. All the other banks in Utah and Wyoming and Colorado and Missouri and Arkansas and Texas, you know, they should all be fine, but no, they just kept growing and kept growing, kept buying each other out. And the sons of bitches, they got this money from the government and they're buying more banks with it, creating, or they're repeating the same mistakes that caused the problem in the first place. You just don't need to do things that way. you know, back to the hamburger analogy. When I was in the restaurant business, we bought our meat from Tulsa Beef. It was very, very good, very fresh, you know, very all very nice. But if they go bad, it's just Tulsa that gets hurt. But the greed, the Republican oil company kind of greed, they just have to have, same way with the oil companies. They kept buying each other up. You got a little mom and pop kind of Ewing oil kind of thing going on. Here comes Chevron and Exxon and Mobil, everybody, they come in, they buy you up. So, of course, a barrel of oil is going to go to $140 a barrel because there's only three or four oil companies left in America. If you remember the old Dallas TV show, that's what they did. JR got a price of gas was going through the roof, and JR figured out a way that little Ewing oil could sell gas for cheap. And so he did that. I'm sorry, I'm under cat attack right now. If they would stop this predatory thing where the big guy comes in and swallows up the little guy, hell, the whole energy crisis would probably not exist. If these, you know, it's the same old thing. A guy develops an engine that can run on French fry oil or something. So General Motors buys him up or Exxon buys him up and they put that on the shelf. We have just lost the whole entrepreneurial spirit in this country where nobody gives a fuck anymore. You buy everything you get your hands on and then it gets, quote, too big to fail. And then it does fail. And then the whole country's got a problem instead of one little region. I don't know why we put up with that. We just do. We got no leadership. It's like there's nobody at the top with any kind of brains. They can't see this coming. It makes no sense. Should piss you off. It pisses me off. Makes me want to drink.
Stand by for a party. 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 Party music sweep.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about my trip in the hospital. And no, it's not going to be like last issue. We're going to make it go away after just a little bit. And you might even find a little humor in it. I ate a pizza, a Savastano's pizza, very good pizza. When they cook the sausage, it's the best pizza in town. My brother, the priest, and his wife were here, and we went to Savastano's. We ate the regular pizza, and they liked the deep dish. And they went on and on. They said, this is the best damn pizza we ever had. And I thought, well, if you like the deep dish, sure. And we've been eating the same pizza for a while, so I told Miss Bart, let's try that deep dish, see what that's like. She said, okay. We went and got us a pizza. We watched the Emmys. So what's that, the 8th or the 9th? Come on, kitty. Jesus Christ. Sitting there watching the Emmys, eating a pizza, drinking little Black Russians, having that good time. Loved it. Later that night, not so much. I had to call Ralph 4, 5, 6 times. Didn't like that. But it wasn't over with that. Just kept getting worse. Then I wake up Monday. I don't know if I ever got to sleep Sunday night, but when I woke up Monday was a tough day. Maybe the worst shape I've ever been in my life, as far as I know.
Damn cat.
Monday was just a horror film. Monday was just me going left and right. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It just hurt so bad, and I, you know, just wanted it to go away like everybody would, but I made it through Monday somehow. Tuesday was a little better, but I had an appointment Tuesday. I had to meet these people. I waited 6 weeks to get an appointment of these appraisers to come look at this stuff. I met with them, and now I'm standing there, and I'm just not doing very good at all. I was, my face had no color in it, and I was sweating, and I was just dizzy, and it was just all bad. But I made it through that. Well, actually, I didn't. I told them I'll be back in a while. Went home, went to bed, and came back when they were done. Wednesday, felt a little bit better, but we're talking about, this is like Bush's economy. You know how they brag how we gave you 5 years of the most sustained growth ever in history, something like that? Yeah. It was not like that. I felt so goddamn bad on Monday. Tuesday was better. Wednesday was better. Thursday was better. Friday was better. But it wasn't like, oh, great times are here. No, it's just I went from totally fucked to totally fucked to almost totally, you know, like that, crawling out of the hole. By the time Friday got here, I assumed by then the food poisoning was gone. But by then I was dehydrated and I was weak and I hadn't eaten anything all week. I had like a cup of soup one of those days. So Friday I called the doctor and I said, hey, I just got to come in. And I'm so weak, I don't know if I can come in without an ambulance, and I really don't want to spend the money on an ambulance. That'd be $1,000. And what killed me is when I made the call, I noticed how hard it was to hold the phone up in the air. I'm on my back in the bed holding my iPhone up in the air, and I thought, damn, this iPhone weighs like 25 pounds. So they said, yeah, if you can come in, go on and come in. So I did, and when I got there, I said, boy, I'm just real sick. And they go, yeah. Everybody comes in here, claims they're real sick. You know, I go, well, okay. So the doctor looks at me and says, we better run some tests. Wait. Hey. Rusty. Get out of there. So they ran urine tests, and they ran blood tests, gave me a chest x-ray. He listened to my chest, and he said, that don't sound good. And while I'm down to getting all these tests done, I mean, I've had all those tests before, and this lady that's working on me gets a phone call, says, oh, the doctor says, why don't you have a flu test, too? And I'm going, flu test? And she says, lean your head back. And I'm going, what? And she ran a Q-tip up my nose. I would guess 2-3 feet. It was, oh, fuck. I said something like, holy Jesus. But by the time, after I said ho, it was already gone. But I had never had anything go that far up my nose ever. And so they did all that. And they said, go back upstairs and wait at the nurse's station for the report. So I get up there. They said, you can sit there. I said, I don't think I can sit there. I need a place where I can lay down. I'm going to faint or do something, pass out or fall down, something. So they put me in a room, and that was kind of creepy. Every now and then somebody opened the door and said, oh, God, there's a body in room 6. So eventually a doctor came in and said, you're pretty sick. And then his assistant came in and said, you're sick as a dog. Like, yeah, thanks. There you go. So he said, we could send you home, but really you need to be in the hospital. So I said, fine. Put me in the hospital, make this shit go away. Call Mrs. Bart. She drives me down to the hospital. And there's 3 sets of hospitals in Tulsa. Remember, no, you probably don't, but Oral Roberts cut all that shit for building this hospital in South Tulsa. See, in Tulsa, north where the blacks live, and west where the white trash lives, sorry, but I'm trying to save time, there are no hospitals. Screw them. Nobody cares. You know, that's the thinking. This is Oklahoma. But they have the original old-time hospitals downtown. And kind of in mid-south Tulsa, they have the real hospitals. And then in way south Tulsa, you know, where all the new buildings are, where the super rich, or they don't have super rich in Tulsa, but where the wealthy live, that's where they have the real hospitals. And 5 years ago, oh, as a matter of fact, I was going to do this show the day I went to the hospital. Friday the 13th was the day I went to the hospital. You longer-termers might remember Friday the 13th, 2004. That was when I had my little personal 9/11. And, you know, what, I make this up? I orchestrated shit to where it would hit me on Friday the 13th? I don't think so. But it was just coincidental that the Friday the 13th, it got me in 2004. Now here it's Friday the 13th, 2009. I was going to do my triumphant, I'm 5 years, I'm still here, radio show. But no, I'm sick as a dog. I'm so sick I can't sit in a chair. Okay. So it's Friday the 13th, and the reason I bring that up is last time I needed an emergency room, I went to what I thought was the good hospital in South Tulsa, and they went ahead and took me in and gave me, you know, they treated me and all that at the emergency room, but the doctor told me later, no, you need to go to the downtown hospitals, and I was going, well, I'm white, why do I have to go to the downtown hospitals? And they said, that's just the way it is, that's what your plan pays for or something. All right, fine. So this time, I didn't have much of a choice. I'm laying on the floor in his office, and he says, well, we need to get you to the hospital. Should we call an ambulance? Or I said, no, the wife will take me there, trust me. So I called her, and she showed up, took me to the hospital. We get there, it's probably noon. Wasn't a line, go figure. You know how you figure there's probably going to be 50, you know, it's like the horror shows you see on TV. No, didn't have none of that. That is one of the better things about Tulsa. They don't have a lot of that. Or maybe they just make it up, you know. They do a movie in New York about let's go to the emergency room and there's 40 people ahead of you. You don't get much of that in Tulsa. So we get there and there's maybe one guy ahead of me. Everybody's kind of being friendly with each other. And I'm like, hello, trying to breathe over here. Pretty sick over here. And they weren't paying a lot of attention to me. So, I mean, they kind of were, but I wanted more. You know how it is when you're real sick and the whole world's about you. I don't care about nothing or nobody. Just take care of my ass. Kitty, get away from me. So I thought I'd put a little bug in the mixture. I said, feeling a little light of oxygen. Any chance I could get some oxygen before you take me to my room? And oh, no, that would not do. So second best, they put me in my room. I figured I outwitted them there. Since they couldn't bring the oxygen to Mohammed, they took whatever. So they put me in this little holding room thing, which I guess is like the triage circle, the on-deck thing. You know, they put you in there and see if... I guess, A, they want to be sure you're stable. They don't want to put you in a room and then you're dead the next time they check on you. So they put me in this room, take off all your clothes, you know, and then they start the endless questions. Oh, please. I mean, I understand they have to ask the questions, but, you know, list all the surgeries you've had. Well, I had my tonsils out when I was like 9, you know. How does that affect right now? I understand they have things they got to do. So there's me and Mrs. Barton in this little room, and these people, they're coming and going. First thing they did, stuck an IV in one arm. Ooh, with two bags. I was a double bagger. I had a double that day. Let's see, the other wires, they have me hooked up to the EKG machines and the heart machines and the blood pressure and the this and that. You know that Richard Pryor used to talk about the thing, you watch it, doom, 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 and you keep watching because when it don't doom anymore, that's your ass. Okay, so that was the wires out my right side. The wires on my left side was the IV and stuff. So they're going through the whole list of things. This nurse, Rebecca, comes in. And Rebecca is going through all this stuff with me, you know, running through the list. It's like, yeah, lady, please. You know, I've never told you before, but nobody fills out an application quicker than me. I can rock it through that some bitch. You said, you know how you go to a doctor's office and they say, here's a, you know, 6 pages, fill it all out. I'm done in 5 minutes. When I bring it back, they said, no, sir, you have to fill out all the pages. Hey, they are filled out. Look at the ink on the paper. That's a clue. So we go through the whole list there. And this is the part. You know, I could have done this on the page, but this one part you just had to have been there. As we get done with the paperwork, now she says somebody, it was strange, and I assume they have to do this. I understand why they do this. But she asked who lived with me. I said, Mrs. Bart. She said, no other people in the house. I said, well, kiddies, you know, no. And she said, are you being dominated by anybody? And I laughed, like, no, lady, nobody's going to dominate me. And she said, you're not being abused? No. No, I'm not abused. You're not being physically or emotionally or sexually abused? No, lady, I'm not. What do you want to hear from me? You know, I look at my wife, I tell her, I can take her. Trust me, I can take her 4 out of 5. I never have fought my wife, but I'm pretty sure if it came down to that, I'd come out the victor. So she says, okay, and she's going through this and that, keep going. Then we get to the physical part of it, which I understand they got to do some stuff. So she put the palm of her hand under the ball of my right foot and said, push down like you're driving a car, you're accelerating. I did that. I can do that very well. I scored an A on that. Then she put her hand on the other side of my right foot and said, now pull back on it. And I did good there too. Then she checked the other foot, fine. Then she looks at me and says, okay, now I need to check your tailbone. I'm going, check my tailbone? Little sidebar here. I hadn't been in the hospital, and funny how February keeps popping up. I hadn't been in the hospital since February 1970. So it had been 39 years to the week that I'd been in the hospital. So I have no idea what hospital procedures are. I mean, I've been in the hospital to get like an x-ray or a stress test or this and that, but I hadn't been admitted, hadn't been a patient in 39 years. So I don't know what they ask. So lady says she got to check my tailbone. I'm thinking, I don't know. That's just not, you know, and you out there, I know there's ER people and nurses and doctors and stuff that read this or listen to this. Do me a favor and send me an email. Tell me about this. This got to check your tailbone. I mean, A, I have one. We all have one. I'm not sure what it was that she needed to check for. But anyway, she finally, after she got done with everything else, she said, okay, now turn over on your side. And I did that. And she lifted up my little coat. That's the other thing. I'm walking down the aisle. I got there dehydrated as hell. Then they put these IVs in me and I'm thirsty. So I've got liquid coming in me like crazy. Ergo ipso facto, I got left. Liquid coming out of me like crazy. So I'm using the bathroom like 4 times an hour, no exaggeration. I am just a machine when it comes to that. And they kept saying, you know, you need to secure the back of your robe when you know, the bathroom is right next door. It's not like a long walk down the hall. You need to secure your back door. And it's like, yeah, like I give a fuck. So when this lady went to check my tailbone, you know, it wasn't no big deal to me if I was a young, sweet thing. And the doctor was a lecherous old bastard. I might have put up a little protest, but hey, far as I know, lady just wanted to look that fine Bart Cop ass, as far as I know. I mean, I never heard of no damn tailbone check. You ever heard of a tailbone check? I had never heard. What are they looking for? Yes, I have one. I've never heard of tailbone defect, tailbone disease. I've never heard. I can't come in today. I got tailbone problems. If you break it, I understand it hurts like a bitch, and I get that. But was I complaining of a broken tailbone? No. Anyway, they had to check my tailbone. Rebecca wanted to look at my fine Bart Cop ass. I just had a feeling, but I let it go because I'm still weak at this point. Okay, so we get through that. Tick tock, tick tock. I'm there like 6 hours. No, maybe 8 hours. Finally, 8 or 9 o'clock that night, they finally take me to my room, and I'm dreading this now because remember, this is the downtown hospital. I asked him, I said, you know, don't put me in with some old guy who likes to keep the thermostat at 78 because I'm Mr. Freeze. I need it cold. I need it like 65 degrees. You know, I'm in here for dehydration. So you put me in a room at 78 degrees, I'm going to sit there and sweat. Now, does that make any sense if I'm here for dehydration to be a sweat machine? So if you can, put me in a private room or at least in a room with another refrigerant. She said, well, can't promise anything, but when you get to your floor, ask about that. We got there, we didn't even need to ask. They move us into this big-ass room. All right, now, I tell you what, I'm very, very impressed there. I went in worried about this. But I got to the room, I'm not sure it was brand new. Might have been built in the last couple years, 3 years maybe. But everything was, and it was huge. It was like the size of a Best Western or a Ramada. I mean, I haven't stayed in either of them lately, but it was bigger than Motel 6, we'll put it that way. And everything was modern. They had a lot of this, a lot of that. You know, I was expecting like a, this is St. John's Hospital, Catholics, downtown Tulsa. I'm figuring old buildings, you see, they're built like in the 40s. I've got those, you know, the yellow bricks kind of for walls and stuff. I was expecting that, but no, this is very modern, very nice. And it was a double room, but instead of two beds, they had a bed-like platform, something there. And they said if she wanted, Mrs. Bart could stay. And I thought, well, how cool is that? I wanted to get, it's like 10 o'clock at night now on a Friday. I would rather have her inside the house with locked doors than running around on the street. You know, I didn't want her to stay that late, but she wanted to. So when we found out there was an extra, in effect, bed in the room, she just said, well, I'll stay the night. Cool. And of course, the bureaucracy being what it is, they had to send in a new guy with another computer to go over my entire medical history again. It's like, really? You can't have somebody from downstairs just email you a copy of the whole thing I went through. Yes, I had my tonsils out when I was 8 or 9, and yes, this and that. We go through the whole list. Then this guy, this William, I think was his name. Nice guy. That's something, a little sidebar. Everybody I met, this is so weird because, you know, I can complain about anything. Everybody I met was just as damn nice and competent as they could be. How often does that happen to anybody where you meet 10, 12, 15 people and every one of them is nice and competent at the same time? Well, except for this Rebecca having to check out my fine bark up ass. Okay, so he goes through the whole list again. Yeah, 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 this and that. And then so he goes down to the edge of the bed and he puts the palm of his hand under my right foot and tells me to press down like I'm accelerating in a car. All right, so I do that and then I pull back and then he does the other foot and that. And I said, you're going to need to check my tailbone. And he looks at me and he laughs. And he says, no, why would I need to check your tailbone? I said, bitch, I knew it. That Rebecca, she was only trying to check on my fine bark cop ass. There was no reason for her to check my tailbone. I knew it. My instincts told me, my poker instincts had kicked in. The minute she said, I need to check your tailbone, I thought, no, that sounds like a bluff to me. You don't need to check my tailbone. You want to check my tailbone. Something's wrong here. I knew it at the time, but I was a little dizzy. I was a little weak. It was right after they brought me there. My poker instincts were down just a little bit on their honing. But the minute he said, no, why would I need to check out your tailbone, I felt violated. Well, no, actually, she got a glimpse at my ass. I did. Wasn't quite like a total violation. It was more like a glimpse of my fine bar cop ass. But from there, things got better. By this time, it's 10, 11 o'clock at night. I was weak and, you know, getting better. Hell, I've been on the IVs for 7, 8 hours now. So I peed 40 times or something. Yeah, I'm doing okay on the dehydration now. Oh, I didn't tell you. But they got me on, where's that damn list? That's a long-ass list, too. See if I can remember it. They got me on food poisoning, dehydration, hypoxia, which I don't even know what that is. It means you don't have enough oxygen. They got me on, oh shit, there's 3, 4 other things. Well, the flu was one of them. I don't know. It seems like there's 5 or 6 of them they got me on. I asked them if they could put down exhaustion too, like when them fancy rock stars, you know, when they get in that, you know, what the rock star overdies on something and they say, oh, suffering from exhaustion. Yeah. He exhaustedly lifted that Jack Daniel bottle until he had to go to the hospital is generally what that means. So it's late, late, late in the day. We decide to call it a night. So we shut off the lights with this IV drip thing, the little cage, the little box you got to carry on. You know, when you see a horror show in the hospital, it's the thing that always crashes, you know. On TV, it's always a glass bottle that's dripping. No, trust me, they use plastic in real life. I'm trying to get to sleep, and this machine next to me, every 15 seconds, it's going, You know, ordinarily that wouldn't keep me up, but the idea that it was every 15 seconds, if it had just been some random noise, fine. But I'm the type of guy, if I'm trying to get to sleep and there's that one bird chirping or that one dog barking or that one squeaky thing going on, I can sleep through a thunderstorm, I can sleep through a train going by the house, I can sleep through a lot of stuff, but anything that's chirpy like that drives me nuts. So I'm laying there a half hour, 45 minutes in the dark, I ain't going to sleep. So I turn the TV back on, I'm back awake now, it's 1 o'clock, and Mrs. Bart sees me, and she wakes up. So hey, here we are stuck in the hospital, we had time on our side. So we start kicking around this whole adoption thing that ruined last issue's Bart Cop Radio, and we just decided we're going to make that go away. In 90 seconds, I'll give it to you here. The way the law is set up, at least in this state, if you have assets, you have to use them for your own care, which I guess that makes some sense. And when you run out of assets, then the government takes over. And we've been beating our head against the wall this time, trying to maximize his assets. But we got to thinking, and we finally decided that whether he runs out of assets in March of 2011 or September of 2011, what difference does that make to us? Mrs. Bart's inheritance had been all shot to hell. She's his only living relative, and he once was a millionaire. See, that's part of my master plan, if you heard last issue. But whatever she was going to inherit from him outside of some personal trinket, whatever, was now, the only way she could inherit it now is if he just died. If we get a phone call that he's died today, then we no longer had to pay the $140 a day, $50,000 a year, and so the assets would then go to her. At that point, it would be worth fighting for. But if all we're fighting for is the date in which they shift the burden from us to the government, hey, let's shift that sumbitch today. We just don't care. So we made that decision, middle of the night, cleared up a lot of things. So with some luck, we're going to bury that whole issue. You know, the poor guy is still alive. And we went to see him the day after I got out of the hospital. And I told Ms. Bart, it kind of makes it a little easier for us if we went to see him. You know, he's locked in this nursing home. No chance of escape unless... Oh, I haven't told you about this part. What if I should? Dare. I guess I can always take it out if I have second thoughts. But there is a chance. He thinks he has an original Leonardo da Vinci. He has a painting of a Madonna and a baby that looks to me... What do I know about art? But I've been in a lot of museums. It looks to me to be hundreds and hundreds of years old. And he spent a lot of his life researching this painting, researching Da Vinci, you know, the brush strokes, the color of the baby's palm, the little wisp of hair above the Virgin's ear, the hay strokes is the manger scene, you know, the hay strokes that are painted from right to left like a left-hand painter would do, the lighting, the this and that. You know, he researched all Da Vinci's paintings, which weren't that many, 30 or 40 or so, and he's looking at his painting, and he's looking at all these other Da Vinci paintings like pictures of. And he says, look, the way her eyes are, it's just like the eyes that Da Vinci did in this other painting. The way her hands are, it's just like the hands on the Mona Lisa, seriously. And the color here, the bright blue of the Virgin Mary's coat is the same bright blue that's on the Virgin Mary on the rocks, which I know sounds like a drink, but it's a famous Da Vinci painting. And he's got 30 or 40, 50 pages of documentation of why this is a Da Vinci. Now, odds are it's not a Da Vinci. But you look at this thing and say, holy Jesus. We showed it to an art appraiser here in Tulsa, and she's an elderly woman, 70, in her 70s. She saw it, and she gasped. She said, my God, what do you have there? And we said, well, he thinks he's got a Da Vinci. And she said, well, I studied in Vinci, Italy. She has some degree in Da Vinci art. And she said, I'm not sure that's not a Da Vinci. So if that Da Vinci is a real Da Vinci, it's worth like 7-8 figures, we'll say. But if it's not, then the poor old guy is stuck in this nursing home, really, until he dies. He's there now because he can't, his mind doesn't work right. But the bad news is 3/4 of his mind is working pretty good. That's causing us some trouble. He's scheming a way to get out of there. Last time we were there, he said, if I have to throw a wheelchair through the damn window and break and crawl out of here, I'm out of here pretty soon. I ain't standing it. I can't take it no more. I don't like the food. I don't like the people. Yeah, and they got him locked up in the ding ward. I mean, the severe ding ward. I don't know why they couldn't just put him with the other people who need help, you know what I mean? Need help with their, maybe dressing, maybe with the bathroom, maybe help cutting their food kind of thing. He's one of those, but he's there with the other people who who are way, 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 all the way gone. And that ain't right, but when we go to see him, you know, if he gave those big doe eyes and said, oh, please, am I stuck here forever? You have to help me. That would be sad. But now when we get there now, he's angry. I want out, goddammit. I want out right now. I don't want to wait one more day. If I have to pay an attorney $1,000 a day, I want out of this son of a bitch. And we're going, well, yeah, we're working with you on that. To keep telling us lie to him. Yeah, yeah, Uncle Bill, we're doing all, we're working on that. And he goes, hey, you told me that the last 44 days in a row. I was like, damn, it's hard to outwit it. He is a very, very sharp man who had the, you know, the stroke or whatever. And he's not taking the bullshit. You know, they keep telling us, I'll just shine him on. Tell him, yeah, 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 working on that. No, he ain't falling for that, doctor. He ain't falling for that at all. He's as sharp as they come. And you better watch it. In his present state, there is a chance he is the smartest man in that facility. Smarter than the doctor, smarter than me and Mrs. Bart, smarter than the nurses, smarter than the other people. He may be the top dog in that place, but they got that thing on his leg where he can't get away and this and that. Anyway, so what I'm doing right now, okay, we're done with that. I'm putting a big giant bow around that. You might hear an occasional Uncle Bill anecdote in the future, but most people who are 86 years old are dead, or they're strapped to a bunch of machines and stuff trying to keep their heart beating kind of stuff. No, his heart's just fine. He walks every day. He's ready to go. He's ready to lift some weights. He's ready to do this and that. It's just he doesn't score well on the test, but you have a conversation with him, and he's going to outwit you. We appeared to put a bow on that. We hired an auctioneer in this other town. We hired an auctioneer for all the, quote, treasures that we took out of the house and brought to Tulsa. So we got two auctions coming up. That's going to, and then there's a property. That's all going to go away. And then we have to deal with the person, which is sad, but what are you going to do? He's 86. All his other friends are dead. They're all gone. It's sad that he outlived everybody. Is that the moral of the story? Don't outlive your friends. Die early. Would you rather be Marilyn Monroe or Uncle Bill? I don't know. Lots of life's questions. But at the St. John's Hospital, food was good. Staff was good. State-of-the-art equipment. I was real damn surprised. I thought they were sending me to some backwards Catholic hellhole, you know, in the basement of some place, rats walking around and that. But no, it was top-notch. They fixed me up. I got out really quick. They turned me from a guy who couldn't sit in a chair to a guy who's now sitting in a chair. I started to say I'm full strength, but no, I'm not. I'm 5 years after my diagnosis. I can feel the effects. I'm not the tiger I was 5 years ago, but then... hell, I'm still here. You can hear I have some little spark in my voice. And I'm not going anywhere soon, so hey. Oh, I think I'm going to do a shot of Chinako for that. How rare is it to have a double shot of Chinako inside the issue? Okay, so that's the hospital story. Let's go to something else. Okay, a quick addendum, or as they used to say in Dallas, they called a codicil, little addition to the will at the end of the will. The one I was forgetting was pneumonia. Yeah, I was in the hospital with food poisoning, pneumonia, dehydration, hypoxia, and the flu. That was a bitch. I hate to be in the hospital for five things. One would do. The other thing I meant to mention and forgot about, that lady, Rebecca, who stole a glimpse of my fine bar cop ass, she comes over to me with one of those, with a airtight little cup thingy, and she says, I need some sputum from you. And I'm going, lady, A, I don't give that shit out, and B, my wife is sitting right there. You got a lot of nerve. And she says, no, 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 I'm talking about you need to cough something up out of your lungs for the lab. And I thought, oh, that makes a lot of difference. It just seemed illogical to rename the thing. But then again, I haven't been in the hospital 30 days. See, again, I've had that good luck. I had that little 9/11 there in 1970, and now here it is 30-something years later, I have made some troubles. But all that time here, I was the golden boy. You know, nothing went wrong. I mean, sure, now and then we'd lose a grandmother or a grandfather or something. But for that long, for 30-something years, to have nothing go bad. Incredible lucky streak had come to an end. But it is not sad because, geez, so many people have shit happen to them yearly. How many people go 5 or 10 years without a little 9/11 going on? You know, we went 3 decades plus without that. And I'm grateful to you, God. Awesome. Well, there you had it. Bark Up Radio, show number 149 in the can, for better or worse. Before we go, I'd like to thank the Listeners, like to thank the subscribers, and if you're a listener without subscribing, shame, 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 because we need your money. Even in Oklahoma, it takes money to live. I know I've been making the case that it doesn't, but it really does. Like to thank those who send the occasional check in the mail, too, because when you write love on a check, the money goes to me instead of George W. Bush. Oh, he's out of office, isn't he? Damn, it's like I heard Jon Stewart say he keeps writing fuck you, Bush, on his checks. You know, I got to break myself of that habit. You know, it's like when you hear the White House said today, you think those lying bastards, but no, they're no longer lying bastards. I have to get used to that. Okay, tell you what, we're at the end of the show, running out of CD space. Not sure what the closing song is, but I'm betting it's going to be real good. So appreciate you listening. Thanks for subscribing. And we'll see you next week. The big show, number 150. This is Bart Kopp, and I'm gone.
Listen to the talk that's going around the town.